Hello, everyone out there on Radio Statler. This is Side Pocket. It doesn't really matter who I am because right now I'm going to interview for about half hour to an hour someone who I'm kind of nervous in interviewing because to be completely honest, he is actually one of my huge idols. Hailing from awesome sunny state of California, the only person that I know that can rock rainbow hair really well, and owner of Cordphere Electronics, maker of so many different stuff. And to share a quick story, I used to be an all programming guy. I never understood electronics, even when I took Cisco training and was really good at crimping my own wires because I'm a huge phone person. I never knew anything about electronics. I went to Nauticon one year. Mitch made me seem what it was like, oh, you just put this Lego on this Lego. I felt like an idiot. And I ended up making, for all the people that are on the stream, one of these, this little video game sort of machine called the Mennonite. And so I am very, very truly honored to introduce on air on Radio Statler, Mitch Altman. Thank you for being here, everyone. So cool. So Mitch, before we get into like the heavy stuff, what do you think of the Hope Number 9 so far?
Oh, man, I'm ecstatic. It's finally happening after 2 years of planning and developing and doing and no sleep for the last 3 weeks. But it's great. There are so many happy people out there, and that's what it's about.
Yeah, no, because like I think I saw more smiling faces here than last year, like honest smiling faces and stuff. And I'm sure your table and you are contributing to that. Because a lot of people know you for your current for electronics, TV Be Gone. But before all that, tell us kind of like what your background, like, you know, where'd you grow up, sort of thing. Like.
I guess the short version, I was born in Chicago and Northside. And parents moved to the suburbs to have better schools. And they may or may not be better schools, but they sure had better bullies. And and wow, that was really rough.
We can all relate to that.
Yeah. Growing up introverted geeks as we are. So, eventually learned to live a life I love and love sharing my love of whatever, helping people any way they can. I've been a geek all my life. I've always wanted to know how and why things work. Mm. I'm sure you can relate to that. We all do in our own realms. But what worked for me, what got really fascinating for me was electronics. Mm. Growing up in the 60s, went from tubes to transistors, and things started changing really quickly as a result.
Telecom system was still fairly new to the public and all sorts of stuff.
Oh, yeah, and you could figure it out.
Yeah.
And and there was a challenge, so making the usual red boxes and all that stuff.
Yep.
And eventually a blue box, which was really scary because it was Ma Bell who knew everything, and one of those vans might come by and catch you a little teenage kid.
So they actually patrolled stuff. Now they're getting rid of them.
Now you just make phone calls for free. But it was cool to learn how to do that and use electronics to make all these things. And so going to electrical engineering in school really didn't help me a lot, but it did surround me with a few people who were as fascinated with the subject as me. And I was lucky enough to have an advisor in school as an undergrad and then grad school who did not take military money and who...
We'll get into that in a minute.
Sure, whatever you like. Who opened it up to people who weren't even students. Mm. And so he was really wonderful having us do projects we love. And then we could share them with each other and learn from each other, and all these other people coming and going was basically a proto hackerspace.
Yeah, that's what that sounds like to me, like a graffiti research lab kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, and except for with microcontrollers, because we at the beginning of my involvement there, he got $1 million of microcontrollers from Intel, and microcontrollers were the hot new thing then.
How did he convince Intel to do that? Did he ever say?
Well, Intel saw a bunch of people who would get to learn their microcontroller rather than Zilog, which was their competitor then.
Yeah.
And or Motorola or any of the others. And once you know something, you want to use it more. Mm. Although in my case, I wanted to use 6502s more because it was way easier. But in any case, I used Intel ones on my thesis and had a great time there.
Awesome.
So, and then working in electronics as a consultant, eventually wanting to do something I really love rather than just doing consulting for other companies for their projects, which were okay, but they just didn't make me go jump out of bed and go, whoa, cool, I'm glad I'm doing this.
It's like, here's this VCR, how do we make it run better than the time work? And it's like,
yeah, or, you know? Or a PDA, yeah. Or a disk drive controller, or even virtual reality, which is cool, but it's just not my thing to get me totally excited.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, making the time to do things that excited me is what got me doing TV Be Gone. I didn't know that's what would happen, and I certainly didn't expect to make a living from that, but life is weird, so.
Well, like, just quickly interlude there, the story, while it's a long story, that to me is very much like the core of what most of us like to call the American dream. You're out there doing what you like to do, making a living off of that, something that you love, making other people happy in the process. And so many questions I could spin from this. So kind of rewinding back, that professor that you talked about that you worked with who opened up in shop, one of the questions that I was going to ask was like, anyone doesn't have to even be in electronics or hacking or do it yourself or whatever. Like, what was, like, who were, plural or singular, like, your idols, like, growing up that sort of you feel like built you the way that you kind of are today?
Yeah, well, I had mostly really, really bad teachers.
Sometimes those are the best teachers.
Well, I learned what
not to do, yeah.
Yeah, and that taught me, I mean, I love teaching, so that showed me how to become a better teacher. And then from the few examples I had of really good teachers who got me thrilled with subjects that they taught, no matter what they were, those are the people that basically saved my life. I was so depressed as a little kid. And these few teachers who showed me, who shared their enthusiasm and love for their subjects and life is what got me by. So, you know, those really were my heroes, you know, living, breathing, real ones that were in my life. I had some musical heroes like Frank Zappa, who always did the music they loved rather than, you know, people like, you know, whatever, I won't name names, but people who were good musicians but decided to just make money instead of good music.
Yeah. We have a lot of those.
We have a lot of mediocrity in our country, and yet there are still people who, you know, do what they love, whether or not it makes them a lot of money, and a lot of them make a living from it, which I think is great.
Yes, that's, we should all really, you know, strive to that, you know, no matter what your excel is, whether it's dancing or electronics or hacking, you know, there's always that one thing that we know how to do, and you can make that into, speaking of making that into gold, let's talk a bit about, eventually, so after you learned a lot about hardware stuff, which I'm going to go back to a moment, but you then developed what I would personally say was your first claim to fame. Besides just being an awesome dude, is the Cornfield Electronics, if I'm saying that correct, that the company, like, how did that concept, like, all start, and, like, what were, like, you know, tell me some of, like, the products for the people that don't know about there, you know, because most people know you for TV Be Gone's, but
yeah.
You have other stuff that's in there, too.
Yeah, my main thing that I make a living off of is TV Be Gone, keychain that turns TVs off in public places, in case someone doesn't know.
I will make comment on that. Those truly made the Super Bowl interesting for me for the rest of my life. That's like my hobby is going to the biggest sports bar in town and just seeing the reaction to that, you know, the pure chaos of it. The fact that people, which is a good, I feel like you kind of made it, if I'm saying this correctly, it really shows how much people are, even with the internet today, really enslaved to their television sets, you know? It's literally like kind of the 2 hours of hate from 1984, but, you know, it's pretty nuts.
It is pretty crazy. Yeah. Unlike 1984, the book or the movie, it's not illegal to turn the telescreens off, so we can do it.
Thank God.
But yeah, and, you know, I don't like sports, and I don't really go to bars, so I don't go to sports bars. But it is interesting to note that TV Be Gone sales go up every time there's a Super Bowl.
Oh, I did not know that. That makes a lot of sense. And it's, you know, and it also goes to the thing about with TV Be Gone's that, you know, I think the original point, which Emmanuel Goldstein really encapsulated, is that too many times, especially at 2600 meetings in New York, we're having such great conversations about, you know, government and new electronics and who's in jail, the latest cartoon shows, and there's just this TV in the room playing Fox News or SpongeBob SquarePants, and it just won't shut up. It's at like 20 billion decimals, and no one can hear anything. And so you want to turn that off, and there's that
niche.
Yeah,
and now people can.
Yes.
And even if the sound is off, like, I'm a total TV addict. So if it's on, even with the sound off, I'll be watching it and not paying attention to interesting people, no matter how cool the conversation is. And that's actually why I made TV Gondo to begin with.
So where are the other products that you also have at Corns Electronics? People,
you know that. I made TV Be Gone, and I used the name I used for my consulting as a DBA, doing business as me in Cornfield Electronics. I incorporated that to sell TV Be Gone because obviously I had a hit on my hands. And that's really been the main product for Cornfield Electronics. But along the way, I came across Maker Faires and Hope 6, my first hacker conference.
Interesting.
Yeah, which led me to the CCC conferences in Berlin.
Oh, once you go to one conference, once you get exposed to a little bit of hacker world, you want to see it all.
Well, I looked, I go every time I can to these things, and I found my tribe, as we have. This is what it's about, a community. Yeah.
That's what Hope, Hope is for me, whether it's Hope or New York City Comic Con, that place where, you love your hobby so much, and even when you have people that live near you there and that you just feel so alone, like it's just me or it's just us five, and then you come to a Hope conference where everyone not only knows the stuff that you know but is as passionate as you are with your own stuff, and you show up here, and I do this every Hope. I come up the escalators, I see the entire mezzanine, people dressed up as pirates and selling wares, and people talking about panels and pen testing, all sorts of stuff, and all I just think is, I'm home.
Yeah. And what you describe is just a teeny bit of all of this, too, because it's so diverse and wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
What I was saying, like, we can come back to that again, but,
sure.
I wanted to contribute to this community, and my way of contributing that was obvious to me is to teach people what I love, which is soldering and making cool things with electronics.
Remind back to ironically, the first electronic device that I ever got to see from Cornfield Electronics was not the TV Be Gone. I actually found that out later. It was, which I thought were awesome, which were those hypno goggles.
Yeah, and that's
those
what
were
I was going to
awesome,
say.
Like, it was going around.
That was my first popular project to put out in the world because it's way cool.
It got in Make Magazine, I think, 7 or something like that?
Number 10.
Ten.
In 2007.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago now.
I know.
And it's still really popular.
Mm.
And so I started making Brain Machine kits. It's now available with Adafruit.
And just as a quick thing for people that don't know out there, what exactly does the hypno goggles? I'm sorry, they're not the real name, but what do they do?
Yeah, Brain Machine, hypno goggles, whatever you want to call them.
They're really freaking cool.
they're really cool. I think so. So, as long as people have been recording human brainwaves, they've been playing them back.
Yeah.
And that's, it turns out that 70% since the 1920s of people, their brainwaves will start synchronizing to those brainwaves played back if you play it back with light.
Mm.
And you can also do it with sound, with something called binaural beats, which is just a fancy way of saying if you present a pitch in one
pitch
ear
in one, yeah.
and a different pitch in the other ear,
it syncs to your brainwaves.
You hear the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And that difference in pitch is the same as the blink rate on my brain machine.
Yep.
And I go
through an audio and a video.
Audio and visual.
Visual experience.
So, and then I have a sequence of brain waves corresponding to someone meditating, a simplified model of that.
Yeah.
And so people will, if it works for them, they'll follow along and they'll meditate.
Mm-hmm.
But what makes it incredibly fun and explains why it's one of Make Magazine's most popular projects, and even still, is that you hallucinate beautiful colors and patterns along the way, and people really do like hallucinating. So, so a lot of people have tried that out, and that was my main motivation, was to make something intriguing enough so that people who've never even made anything, like you, might want to try to make it.
Right.
And that's worked. It's really cool.
And that's the amazing key thing about Cornfield Electronics, because, for example, anyone, well, even though they do sell kits now, anyone can go to ThinkGeek or a hardware place, and we buy MP3 players, we always buy our electronics full, but what makes Cornfield Electronics is that while you can buy it whole, the mainstay of sort of selling is that it comes with a kit and you build it yourself, and as you build you learn. I find that really fascinating that this is a company that's that you have that's teaching us how to build again, kind of reroute, bring us back to that sort of early human roots of trying to figure things out and making things better.
Yeah, and maybe electronics isn't for everyone, but but I make it simple enough so even people who aren't like right. electronics geeks can yeah. try it out and see if they like it.
Right.
And you know, we all need to right. make things. We really do. We need to.
No.
Because it's, you know, as you were saying, like when we were first surviving on the planet as a species,
right.
we got together and cooperated in mm-hmm. tribes, groups, clans, yeah, because, communities.
Our survival chance goes up when we're together than when we're alone, and our survival also goes up with our tools rather than just using ourselves.
Yeah, that's it exactly. And, yeah. and even though we don't need that to survive, we still need it to thrive.
And an interesting thing, maybe I'll bring this up now, is that it's funny that you say that we don't necessarily need that now on this little off tangent, but with kind of the way things have been going with this skyrocketing of electronics, the fact that more people in a base way understand electronics more now. Like I know people who kind of know how to make websites in HTML now, or back in like 1994, that was like some uber high level amazing thing. And so it's like, as we get up, start advancing, incorporating technology, it's like we kind of need those survival skills again almost. It seems like every year we're getting closer and closer to coming back to that, you know?
Yeah, and it can work too, because, yeah. you know, as I like pointing out, you know, when you work in a job you don't like, which unfortunately is most of us, I'm very sorry.
Used to, I got that.
Oh, yay! Yes. Congratulations.
Actually, got that, and I actually make more money from the. I used to work at a courthouse, so I make more money now when I left the courthouse from the stuff that I left over on that I did working there.
Well, isn't that ironic? Yeah, and the thing is, not only, you know, it's possible to make more money doing what you love than what you were doing before, because right. you really care about it, you're enthusiastic, mm. but maybe you make less. But as long as you're making enough,
right.
then you make enough money doing what you love to keep doing what you love. What more right. do you want?
I know, right? It's the perfect loop. So that's interesting. That's Cornfield Electronics. And the other thing that I'm sure a lot of you out there know what was for is that... I just want to read one interesting thing here because some people are suggesting stuff. Is talk about people by the glasses and it has no effect. I'll actually vouch that while I really do love the hypno goggles, I'm one of the few people where it doesn't 100% work for. But I also noticed that when we tried out New York City 2600, all the people that it didn't work on, which were only like three or four people,
uh-huh.
they were, well, let's put it blunt this way, a lot, the joke that goes around in Side Pocket, he's the crazy one. He's the awesome crazy one. Everyone that was like the crazy one in our group, that did not work. So we're like, ah, but you know, so, you know, it does work. But even if it doesn't work, it's a very interesting, like, I built one at my house. It's like these, you know, you take like these safety goggles and it's just like little mini microcontroller. It's really fascinating. It's like safety goggles. I'd never think of treating it like that as a container for a device.
Yeah.
Like it's
and when I buy them, I buy 100 at a time so right. I can make 100 kits.
Mm.
This company sells a lot of different things, and mm-hmm. one time they asked me, why do I keep buying this one thing and only one thing from them? And I explained it to them and they thought it was really funny.
I've had that when I have my own group thing, and we often buy trophies in there for video games. They give us a discount just because they're so fascinated that we're using them for video game tournaments rather than doing soccer or things like that. But sorry, I sometimes go off tangents. I'm going to try to stay on topic here. So the other thing that I was getting to that I also think that you're pretty well known for, which I really want to go back to California so I can visit, is Noise Bridge.
Oh,
the
yeah.
hackerspace. How did that not start out? Yeah.
That started when I went to my first hacker camp, which is every 4 years put on by the
that's
Chaos Computer Club.
Oh, that's chaos.
Oh, those people know chaos, and they know how to put on a conference, which they call Congress, and it's a German word. And camp blew my mind. It was the most spectacular time ever in my life up till then. And there was one talk by three German hackers about how to start your own hackerspace. They called it the Hackerspace Design Patterns.
Hmm.
And they've been kicking around on the interwebs ever since and growing, because back then there were less than 50 hackerspaces.
Right.
Now there's like 1,000 listed on hackerspaces.org and growing fast, because like conferences where people can get together, share enthusiastically what they love and learn from one another
right.
and teach, as well as make things. And I mean, it's community, yeah. but not just once a year or once every 2 years like Hope
right.
or every 4 years like Camp. It's every day, all day, all night in your hometown, and you can just walk there, and it's amazing. So I wanted that. And me and my friend Jake, who was also at Chaos Camp 2007, we knew after we talked to each other all the time, and we talked at camp, and we knew we were going to go home and do that, and we did. And we wanted to have an anarchist organization. We're anarchist awesome. Kind of people. And also, like being a leader is too much work. So I didn't want to be a leader. I wanted to be just part of an organization, even if I was impetus for poking people to start it. That was it. You're like, now I'm just a member. I'm only home half the time. Jake moved away to Seattle, and yet Noisebridge keeps thriving.
That's pretty cool.
The faces who are in positions of kind of like leadership in quotes change all the time. But we really have no leaders. There are temporary leaders who take on a task as long as the task is relevant. And if it's a task that's required by law, like secretary, the person who does that serves their period of time that they agreed to, and then someone else.
That's really fascinating. I did not know that, because like, I'm used to the hacker spaces around here in New York. And trust me, you know, NYC Resistor and Alpha Labs are great spaces, but there's definitely like a high arc thing there. So I did not know that about Noisebridge at all. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because what fascinated the most thing about me with Noisebridge is that, you know, even though a lot of hacker spaces do cooking, that it's not just all about hardware. You have a cooking space. You have like a space where you can make puppets and like all, just like if you want to physically build something, you have the space kind of there for that. That's what I find so fascinating. That it really is. It's like, I think maybe a more appropriate term is it's a makerspace. It truly is
it's a hackerspace. Yeah, you know, well, makerspace, yeah. Hackerspace. There's no difference.
Right.
Hacking is making things, even if it's conceptual, like software.
Right.
Because you're using very similar parts of your being, you're creating. And
I've always thought of that, you know, that it's a real duality, that like the idea that the make is the actual building, whether it's code or hardware, and the hacking is doing something clever that most people won't do with it. And I think that combined is where the magic truly happens.
Yeah, and you can do that with anything.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I learned to live a life I love. I hacked myself.
Yeah, and that's something that I noticed, a pattern that between Noisebridge and especially in Cornfield Electronics, that, you know, it seems like on the surface that the end goal, particularly with Cornfield Electronics, is that, oh, I'm building little cool things, you know, that I could use to show off. But I realized that, you know, you think that you're hacking circuits, but in reality, I'm going to go into like a matrix go here. You're not, you're physically hacking the circuits, but what you're actually doing is hacking yourself in between, you know, because I notice a lot of stuff is doing brainwave manipulation, all sorts of stuff. It's like you're sort of like discovering and rebuilding yourselves as you're making these things.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and that certainly is my, you know, all the teaching electronics and whatever, I mean, I do love it, but to me, that's an excuse. The excuse is for community, for trying to make it really fun for people to explore and do what they love.
Right.
So that's what it's really about. Right. So if people can make one teeny little step maybe in a direction that they believe will make their life more fulfilling, then that makes me incredibly happy.
Awesome. Just really curious, have you ever been, do you get like pitches for things at Cornfield Electronics from other people that like you later incorporate into Cornfield Electronics, or is there sort of kind of a free spirit?
Well, this is
on
the
that?
Thing with open source, you know?
Yeah.
So when you have an open source project, which all of mine are, including TV Beyond, which I make a living from, then you get people who love your project as well, who enthusiastically share improvements for it.
Mm.
So TV Gone is definitely better as a result of that. People have shared ideas for free, which I've later incorporated.
Yeah.
And then I, in turn, share that with everybody.
Right.
And, you know, you don't have to buy my thing. The plans are online. You can make your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that works great. And same with all my things. Mignonette Game Kit, which you made.
Yes, that's really awesome.
When I brought that to Chaos Congress, one of the people who is there, who is primarily software geek, in 45 minutes, he saw that, and 45 minutes later, he had Tetris on it, low-res Tetris.
Wow.
And I've been using that as one of the things for Mignonette ever since. And and someone else did low-res Space Invaders, and people have made other things, and we share it on our website. So this is what's cool about having community and not saying, no, it's mine, you stay away.
Yeah, the Bill Gates method.
Corporate America method.
Yeah, really.
You know, whether it's Apple or Microsoft or IBM, it doesn't matter. This is the way things have been, but don't have to keep being.
Yeah, even a lot of the so-called indie developers, it's like you can totally see that their end goal is that sort of corporate in-control stuff, too. So it's like, you know, it's really open.
But I'm hoping that even, you know, like large corporations are doing more and more open source, including Microsoft has a whole department for open source now.
Well, an interesting question about that, which I've often seen, like, I'm very familiar with the Graffiti Research Lab around here, and one of the things, they're awesome, but something that they sort of run into all the time is where they make something like a new way to express art through art and technology.
Legally.
And then even in their open source, and I remember them saying this is the consequence of open source, is that another company will sort of take that, do one tweak, make it their own, and start using them for their own corporate, which is sort of like the antithesis of what they're doing, even though they're using the same
But the thing is, tweak or not, it's open source, so, and if it's truly open source, there's no non-commercial restriction.
Right.
So anyone can use their stuff for anything, and as long as they follow the license, and the license for open source is usually, give me credit, because it's my ideas and implementation, and then you must share it, whether for profit or not, as the same license as open source. So the thing that, I mean, GRL does things so people can express themselves, but marketing people use their same techniques now.
Right.
And that's not necessarily making the world a better place.
Although,
but then these people go on and do more cool things. You know, anything you put out in the world, you have no control over.
Well, I also find it fascinating that this hackerspace concept and the idea of open source electronics, like, you know, hardware hobbyism has been around forever, 50s, 60s, with their own, you know, the computer clubs. But it's really, in my theory, it's really taken off now because we have the internet, this almost semi-open communication channel, because I notice a lot that, like, when people do things, for example, the Graffiti Research Lab, and like, some, like, Coca-Cola does the giant graffiti projection painting on the wall, everyone online goes, oh, that's that Graffiti Research Lab thing. They, even though they're using it, people find out where it's from, so it's kind of almost null and void at that point, you know? They can't win.
Well, you know, if they use it for the goals of the organization, then, you know, they do win. And whether or not it's open source or not. But they can't get away with calling it their own.
Right.
They have to give credit and share it as open source because they'll be found out online.
Yeah.
And these things are being held up in court.
Yeah.
So
it's a very just like Papali method that I like.
It's cool that way. So, you know, it's unfortunately they're using it to manipulate people rather than to give people more tools for self-expression.
Right. Consumerism as opposed to empowerment.
But that's our cultural context, is people are finding ways of maximizing profit rather than helping one another.
Well, also goes to the hacker mythos that if there is a technique out there that someone does, there's going to be someone out there that's going to abuse it. You know, that's just the
probably
way things work.
But that's why I like coming up with ideas that I love and that also put into, you know, I try to think of, okay, this is going to go out into our world, our real world.
Right.
And is this something I want in my real world?
And I'm glad that you think of that, because I've met so many, like, you know, I went through college and there was a brief period where I was studying to be a programming researcher to figure out new methods for programming. And I met so many scientists where I definitely ran into that E.M. Malcolm question of that. So many scientists think of, oh, this is the future, this is pretty cool, that they don't stop and go, wait, humans haven't really changed, so how would they use this for good or bad once it gets out there, you know? So I'm glad people out there thinking that. I have a different question here. So what I find very fascinating, one of the things, many things, worshiping kind of about Mitch Altman here, is that you know, you were doing all this awesome stuff, but I would actually say, in my opinion, like, very recently, you found out about this whole hacker culture that's going around, that we have conventions and our own meetings. So tell me, how did you find out about our culture here? How did you find out about Hope and all that stuff?
You know, it was through TV Begun. So I've known about 2600 since I was pretty little, actually. I would read it. I didn't really think of it as a huge community, though, even though there were a bunch of, you know, reader-written, basically, journal.
Right.
But I thought, you know, I just thought of it as a whole bunch of individual geeks like myself who didn't communicate. It just didn't cross my mind there was a community behind it. And it was years later, I do TV Begun, and then there was this weird friendly guy who called me up and wanted 20 of them to sell at the Dayton Hamvention, which is a big ham radio fest in Dayton, Ohio, once a year. And he wanted to sell them and give them away.